You feel its edges in your mind before they even reach your fingers. There's a tremor inside it. Dare you open it? Too late. You already have. Welcome to Haunted MTL's Combo Box, with contributors John Combo and J.M. Brannick.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 4 of Combo Box. I am your host, John Combo, with my co-host,
J.M. Brannick, aka Box Human.
And today, before we get into our episode, we have a few announcements. For those of you who have been looking for my social media presence, well, I can tell you I am now on Twitter at John Combo, one word, two. So at John Combo, the number two.
Not number one.
I'm not number one. Got to that before.
Number two. No, you're like, I can't take that number one spot.
No, I'm not that good. I'm not the John Combo.
Just a John Combo.
And Box, you got a announcement today.
I do have an announcement. I have invested real life human money into some art for our Combo Box.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So we're going to have that. I'm going to try to unveil that to John in a second. But you all will see it soon. But you can describe it to the people too when I give it to you.
Let's see this. Oh, that's perfect.
I want to describe it to the people.
It is a very sharp looking scientist going at his obvious Haunted MTL branded fast food meal. Looks like he's getting right into that hamburger box, and there's a tentacle coming out of it. That is awesome.
And John Combo has the drink.
I am the drink, and J.M. Brannick is the hamburger box.
As it should be. It's just a sketch right now. It's going to be in color. I ask everybody to support local artists that are doing commissions right now. Give them money. This comes from Marta. She's at, it's SUZUIA, and her commissions are open if people are interested. So if you see this art, you like the art, I highly suggest going to her. She's really fun to work with. She's got a lot of fun ideas and really beautiful art. So again, she's on Twitter. It's at SUZUIA. So that's my little surprise.
Original art. Yay.
Original art for what we're doing.
We are moving up in the world.
We're moving up. We got to step up our game. So we get a scientist.
There we go.
That's for you, since you love them so much. You love those scientists.
I do. Those creepy, creepy scientists.
Do you know those things that are necessary for human survival?
That's right. All right, so let's move into our movie review. This week will be a movie review. We are going to do our alt titles, just like we did two episodes ago with Hellraiser. Mm-hmm. Box, you want to go first?
Okay, I will give you the first one, which is D&D adventure music with a horror story.
Very good. Mine, The Bodega Bay Inn, Bored to Death and Still Can't Die.
Oh, that one goes right to it. I was trying to be so careful. Yeah. My number two is Psychics and a Whole Hell of a Lot of Lamps. And we'll get into that.
Yeah, yep.
We will get into the lamps. Oh, I have notes.
Your husband was a despicable, greedy bastard, and other things you don't say at a friend's funeral.
Hey, I don't know. I like Dana. I was hardcore Dana. All right, my last one is Wet Mouth Sounds. Mm. The movie.
Nope. And I just went with the blatantly obvious one. Say hello to my little friends. That's my Tony Montana.
Just throw them around.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I probably should have been a little bit more clever about that because he really didn't like them, but.
No, he didn't.
No. So if you
waste of good puppets.
It was so if you haven't guessed, the movie we are talking about this week is the 1989 classic Puppet Master.
The first one, the original beauty right. of Bodega Inn.
Right. The Puppet Master, not retro Puppet yep. Master or any of the prequel Puppet Masters.
Not Puppet Master, Puppet Master, like, you know, Tokyo Drift, nothing like that. Just the original.
Just the original. And I gotta say, you know, this movie is probably put right in there with that, like, late 70s to early 90s cache of classic, of new classic horror monsters, right up there with Jason and Freddy and Leatherface. And it's interesting because these characters come in at the very tail end of that. And we're going to get into it, but I don't know why.
Yeah, it's, and honestly, looking back at a lot of the movies that we do watch, kind of like Hellraiser of the last time that we spoke, a lot of the first movies, the main villains, if you, and we can argue about if they're villains or not, but the main villains aren't really even kind of villains. They come in very infrequently.
Right.
Yeah. And such is the case with this.
Yeah.
But they made such a big impact. I would say they're kind of the underdogs of some of, like, the horror icons, but they are definitely beloved and iconic.
And now I'll say, so with my fascination with Hellraiser, I didn't realize that Puppet Master was just as deep. I mean, at this point in time, Puppet Master has created 13 movies, mm-hmm. A slew of comic books. And I mean, there's even another movie coming out in 2020, which is Blade, which is a whole movie about just one of the puppets.
The best puppet.
The best. Don't get me wrong. Blade is, if there's a Puppet Master puppet, it's Blade. But I mean, it's
a puppet you want to fuck, it's Blade.
It's yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, not Leech Woman.
Not Leech Woman. No. But we have some notes, so let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So from word go, we have the music.
Yes.
Okay, so the first time I watched this was as an adult, growing up with it in the peripherals of my mind. You know, because again, it was a puppet movie, so I was terrified of it as a child because puppets and dolls are very similar. And honestly, these are dolls. These aren't really puppets in this movie. They are right. dolls. There's no strings. There's no this or that. These are dolls. So the first time I watched it, I was furious at it because there's just so many things. But this time I enjoyed it. But still, when that music start, I still got that little urge of, like, this fucking music, because it does, it's so whimsical and weird. And I know a lot of people love the music because it's very beloved. Trust me, that is all nostalgia. It's horrible. It's terrible. It's like the worst music for a horror movie because it sounds like, oh, you're going on like a Hobbit D&D adventure, or you're on a carousel, or both. You're right. on a Hobbit D&D adventure on a carousel. And it's like close-ups on dolls and things like that. So the beginning montage is fine, but fuck this music.
It really is just like very off-putting, because it's just close-ups of all of the dolls' faces and names, and this music that's just like, who created this score?
Something. So my character is a third level mage. He gets on the carousel. He takes the horse that has the brown mane. Oh, okay. I got to roll to get on it. It fell off. I'm a dumbass. Yes, it's terrible. And the first real scene that we get is in the Bodega Bay Inn in 1939, which we won't get into the other ones, but in this movie, 1939, 39 Bodega Inn, which I thought was like in somewhere else outside of America.
Okay.
Because Nazis are okay to be there, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah. So nobody fucking sees this puppet walking around.
And I am right there with you on that. With all of the disturbances that puppet makes, running through the dog barking at him, running across the piano keys in the middle of broad daylight, you're telling me nobody saw it?
You would have to be looking up at the ceiling constantly not to see this doll running at your feet. So then I was like, okay, maybe people here are just used to him.
Sure.
Like, oh, hi, Blade. What up? And he just doesn't realize that he's already known in these parts. Because seriously, there is no way. It's broad daylight.
Right.
I can see a carpenter ant move across the floor. I'm going to see a goddamn puppet with a fucking blade for a hand and a hook for the other. And I'm going to be like, hey, bud, you want to chill? Because you're the most fuckable puppet. Anyway. So Toulon, we get to see Toulon, this version of Toulon.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's finishing up, I think Jester it was, wasn't it? Because he's making dolls and Chinese doll.
It was Jester, yeah.
Yeah. Chinese doll is looking guard. He's comforting the murderous puppets, which I found kind of charming. He's like, don't worry. Don't worry. The Nazis won't find you.
Right.
Not like, get your weapons ready.
Right.
This is war. And it's kind of funny knowing what we know later, you know, about Toulon and all this stuff. You know, he was very passive this time, but looking again at this movie.
Yeah.
He comforts the murder dolls.
Right. Well, and that's part of this whole thing. Like, what was the intent originally? You know, looking just at the first movie, why would you have created a doll with knives and hooks for hands, but and
funsies
and pins for eyeballs,
funsies, and a tunneler thing for a
right, right.
You know, in case the kids get out of place, you want to scare them a little. Yeah, yeah. And some of his puppets are not like this, like the awkwardly racist Chinese one.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what is more awkwardly racist, that he made it, or that later on it never gets brought back to life.
Like, correct. That's yeah.
The only time we see that guy.
Right. What was the thought process behind that? Why couldn't Leech Woman or Pinhead or Tunneler been the lookout? Why introduce a character
that you're not going to even use?
That never comes back.
Yep. Great question, John. I don't have the answer.
And in fact, I don't think he ever comes back. Like, oh, nope. I'm not getting sidetracked. We're doing this movie.
Just this movie. In this movie, he does not come back.
Right.
Never see that guy again. And we get to see like some of his failed creations too, like in some side shots, and they are horrific. And that must be kind of weird for the puppets too, to be like, so you're just going to give up on that one then? How many?
Right.
In Bodega Bay, we see two Nazis come in, walking side by side with great rhythm together. I don't know if they practiced that or if that just kind of came naturally to them.
Right.
And honestly, I thought it was a really good scene because, again, Toulon's like, don't worry. And he hides them, the puppets, inside of the wall and then kind of shoots himself in the head because of two Nazis, which, again, you have like a million killer puppets.
Yeah, I didn't.
I think you would win.
Again, and that we will never go on to kind of give background to all this information.
Nope.
No.
Not needed. Not necessary.
Not necessary. And I just want to say, so if you have not seen Puppet Master, I don't know. But Toulon is played by William Hickey. And if everybody has seen Christmas Vacation or something else, he normally plays a very crotchety, grizzled old man, and like he's just hilarious, or he's great in all his roles. And I will say, it is an absolute crime that William Hickey gets maybe 5 minutes of screen time in this movie and then just offs himself.
Yeah, less than that. To be a crotchety old man, like the Nazis coming, he's like, go away.
I think if Clark, get my stogies. If he had said that to him, I'd have rolled. I would have died laughing, and it would have made the movie completely watchable for me.
Wait, are you saying this movie is not watchable?
I am saying that it has its moments. It's frustrating, and I will watch it. I will watch it, but it's definitely not. I remember now, and audience, me and Box actually have conversations, not on this show. I made the point known that I remembered the last time I saw this movie. It was October of 2014. I now remember why it took me 6 years to watch this movie again.
It's so weird that you can remember dates like that.
It's very odd.
Back then, I remember I was wearing a red shirt. I had a double latte.
It was October in Oregon, and I was in my apartment, and
and I said, I'm never watching this until 2020.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to erase my memory, and then in 6 years, I'm going to watch this again.
Again, like I said, I watched it, and the first time I was furious at it because it was so, it wasn't what I was expecting.
Sure.
Absolutely. So when I was now knowing what I know and going back into it, it was more enjoyable. It was more enjoyable. I like Dana. She makes the whole movie for me.
Yeah. So let's skip to what year?
Which is great, actually. And I felt for him too, because that must be a squib, like that put on his head. Those hurt.
Yeah.
So, you know, good job, Mr. Hickey, for taking one for the team, because that could have easily have been they're at the door, bang, you hear, you know, and they come in
right.
And there's like, but he actually took it, and it was like a really good shot, I thought. Didn't break away.
They didn't. No, it was great.
Yeah. So, yep. So then, yep, we go to Yale. Let's go to Yale.
Several, I forget what year it is, but it's several. It's supposed to be 1989?
It's present day. Okay. It's 2020, dude. Present day. You can tell by what they're wearing, the music they listen to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we get our intro to Alex, who is taking a nap with his human skull in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we know he's a professor of anthropology. Right. And he gets a vision. You want to tell about the vision?
The first vision is two people dancing, right?
No, it was like the tummy.
He sees blood start spreading across his stomach, and he opens up his shirt, and there's three or four big fat leeches sucking his blood, and
they kind of look like wet poos.
Yeah, they're not very leech-like. No.
They're gross. But then he like starts, and he's like, whoa. And that's it. And that's Alex. He has hair that kind of reminds me of a lion.
He had great hair. I got to say, he had great hair.
It is like a lion's mane. That is Alex. And then we go to the next scene is like, bam, carnival. We go to a palm, like ball reading tent. Hey,
your typical, you know, carnival fortune teller setup.
Yeah. And we have, I think, the best extras as Bud and his girlfriend. Who are getting their fortune read. Bud is told that he will have a job in retail sales.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend's like, what? No, he didn't even finish the 10th grade.
Right. 10th grade. Like, that was a very specific number.
And retail sales. How could that buffoon ever sell anything? But anyway, this is how we're introduced to Dana, who's playing kind of like a charlatan role. But she does have an actual vision in the middle of her cold reading. And it's great because it is a real cold reading. She's like,
oh, yeah.
And it's great because she's like, I'm so sorry about your grandmother. She's going to die soon. And the girl's like, oh, she's already dead. And she like just turns to the guy. It's your grandmother.
Right. Oh, everything's cool.
Like, oh, girl, yeah. And the girl's like, oh, I'm so sorry, bud. It's good. It's really good. But basically in the middle of the cold reading, she has like a real vision, which looks kind of just like getting a migraine.
Right.
But I kind of want to see the scene after that. Cause she's like, you know, she has like a full panic mode.
Right.
And then it just kind of cuts and goes to the next scene. But I kind of want her to explain like to Bud and the girlfriend, like what that was.
What just happened.
Like, yeah. Like, oh, and you're going to get a bad headache one day, but it'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. Play it off.
Yeah, just play it off somehow. And then we meet our other people who are...
Frank and... Oh, Clarissa? Frank and...
Okay, so I didn't name anybody except for Dana, and I actually have that in my notes, is Dana gets her own name now in my notes.
Okay, got it. Oh, I'm sorry. Got it. The others...
Yeah, I his name is Ponytail and her name is Blonde. So Ponytail and Blonde.
Fair enough.
And he's greasy too. He's like greasy guy. They work at Pensa Research.
Yes, yeah.
Very cute. And what do they do, John? Because I don't even know what they do. I watched this movie and I am not even sure what they're doing.
They were I'm not really sure what they were doing in that particular scene other than just trying to be able to psychically read the mind of a test subject who was a young woman. And Ponytail, as I guess he's going to be called now, starts, I know, at least...
He doesn't get a name. He's not cool enough.
At least feigns to understand. The test subject is asked to think about a very... explicit sexual event.
Her wildest sexual fantasy.
And he sits there and is blurting out everything as if he's able to understand it, whereas Blonde is sitting there quite miffed at him as he keeps asking her, oh, can you see this? And she's like, no.
And like, there's just a bunch of computers and beeping.
Yeah.
That's what he's getting this from. Like lights flashing up and things beeping. And he's like, I see a man on the horse in the rain. She's on the beach. I did not appreciate him saying, this little girl has a vivid imagination.
That was pretty creepy.
And then gross smirk.
Yeah.
Little girl has a vivid imagination. Yeah, so he's like super gross. And the blonde lady we know is a scientist because she has glasses.
That's right. Yeah.
And a braid.
And I think like the two of them, their whole thing is, well, Blonde, she's supposed to be able to psychically connect with an object, like understand everything that's happened involving a bed, a car, whatever. And I'm not ever certain that Ponytail's particular expertise ever get fully explained, because I don't think he really has any.
No, but in the scene you think he does, because he's like saying this stuff, looking at things light up, you know, but it's weird. In this first scene you don't really understand.
Yeah, he turns a couple knobs and
beep beep beep, and you're like, oh, okay. Now she's on a beach, and you're like, okay, that's not a vivid imagination.
Right.
I don't know where I went from there. It could have been clowns. It could have been Blade. I don't know. but yeah, that's how we're introduced to this couple.
And I'll say,
oh yeah, the one thing... I'm sorry, go on.
Good. And I'll say, this is
I just wanted to interrupt you that time.
This is how they pretty much build up the credibility of the characters. Like, this is it.
One of them's
a professor at Yale. Oh, he's a professor at Yale. Okay, cool. The psychic is like, she had a real psychic episode. Clearly, she's really a psychic. And then these other two are research scientists at some like made up company.
How do you know it's made up?
Oof, I looked it up. I looked it up.
It's a secret company.
I was double checking that, you know, there wasn't just like companies where they pay people to have sex to see if they have like these telepathic links.
I think like Pensa is maybe a play on Mensa. Isn't Mensa the...
You know what? That makes sense. that would make sense.
Like, oh, they're so smart. So smart. She's got glasses and a braid.
Right.
Yeah, so she can like basically like touch an object and see where it's been. Basically, she can touch an object and see who is fucked on it or near it or with it or anything like that. It basically is all fucking.
Yeah. That's really all that character is based around.
That's basically it. And it's gross. It's not as hot as it sounds. It's gross.
So Ponytail and Blonde get a phone call from Alex. Well, okay. Lion's Mane.
Okay. Yeah, Lion's Mane. I actually gave him a name. I don't know why. Lion's Mane is fine.
And they know. Oh, they knew he was calling. They knew he was going to call because they're psychics.
They're all psychics. They know each other.
They know it. They shouldn't have made the call. If you knew he was gonna...
Well, sometimes you need to hurry things up. He can't just keep having naps with his skull, you know.
True. He might have a class.
Right.
Or something.
Well, I don't know. It's present day, so.
Well, so they discuss visions about their friend. Does this friend have a name or?
Neil?
Well, his name is Neil. I don't know if he had a special name in your notebook.
Oh, I think I just called him like douchebag sometimes.
That makes sense.
And Neil sometimes and douchebag other times.
So they get a call.
Douchebaggy Neil.
Douchebaggy Neil. Something's not right with D-bag Neil. And, you know, we just got a ponytail. Ponytail and Blonde discuss with Lion's Mane. Oh, I can't do this the whole time, but...
Okay, so we'll just call him Alex.
They discuss that they just had a conversation with Dana, and Dana knows exactly where their friend D-bag Neil is, and cut to the plane scene.
Okay, see, I didn't even put that all in my notes. I must have zoned out by then. I was so enraptured in the story.
Yeah.
Because all I have is like, then they go to the Bodega Bay.
They do. And then they arrive at the Bodega Bay and they...
And I'm like, California! ! Question mark.
And that's where we're assuming this particular Bodega Bay is.
It says California. They say the coast of California. And I'm like,
okay.
Are you fucking kidding me? How were Nazis there in 1939 to shoot somebody? That makes no sense. Anyway, go on. I did not get that. I thought Bodega Bay and was...
Well, I mean...
Somewhere, like, in France or, like, you know, somewhere, like, that there was a Nazi occupation, you know, but... apparently not. Fucking California. Here we go. It's pretty. It is a nice place. Okay.
It is. And we'll find out later. It's recently been worked on. Yeah. They walk in. They are welcomed by...
Mouse.
Mouse.
She's real mousy.
Mouse.
She's the widow.
She's the widow. And
they say, where's Neil? And she says, I thought you knew. Next scene, cut to open casket.
Open casket, yeah.
Like, what did she say from the time? And it's in the house, it's in the Bodega Bay Inn. So what did she say? Like, I thought you knew.
Right.
Come follow me.
Yeah.
And he shot himself in the head, and it's an open casket too. I found that was kind of
Well, there's going to be several inconsistencies with I shot myself in the head. It's like, okay.
But yeah, so she seems cool. She seems just sad, you know?
Right.
Honestly, this is where I put in my notes. It feels like Clue, but with psychics, because like more people keep arriving and somebody's dead. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, what's going on? Because it seems weird that he killed himself. And Dana makes sure that he's dead by like sticking like a, what is it? Like a hairpin?
I'm gonna
some kind of long stilettoed kind of
yes
inside of his chest, and she's like, "Yep, he did." And this is when I'm like, "Oh wait, that's right. Dana is amazing because she is so unaffected by so many things."
Right,
I love her. I do. Yeah, but she didn't. Mousy didn't want to bury. There was instructions not to bury him until everyone arrived.
Right.
So he's just been chilling, literally, in the house that she lives in. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not been like, even from the time that they decide they're going to make this trip, 1989, it wasn't very easy to get from the East Coast to the West Coast. There's probably like a couple days before the next flight.
Yeah, and like, you don't know how long that psychic vision, you know, because it was never like a vision of like him shooting himself.
Right.
You know, it was more just weirdness things of like, oh, we should probably go there.
Right. So, yep.
You know, I don't know. If I didn't feel like, yeah, if there's some urgency, but not like tons of urgency, I might be like, well, I guess I'll just go to bed tonight and buy the tickets in the morning or whatever. So this body was probably hanging around for maybe like a day or two without refrigeration.
Sure.
Gross. In the house, in her house, her husband, who killed himself. It's just weird.
Shooting himself in the head.
Just shooting himself in the head. And she's like, you know what, honey? I'm going to stick with your wishes. Fuck that. I'd be like, no, nope. Mm-hmm. Nope. I love you, but you dead. And I got to move on.
You're going to start smelling here shortly.
Yeah, and that's going to give me PTSD. I can't do that. Sorry. It's when your friends come, we can have a memorial or whatever.
There you go.
Yeah. But nope, she was a good wife, I guess, and did his wishes. Still gross. Anyway, Alex is very brown. He wears brown a lot. I wrote that down too. He's just very brown with a lion's mane. Again, he's like a lion, but not ready to pounce because he's just very like sheepish.
Very tame lion.
Very tame lion. All right. Go on.
So that's kind of it. That's really kind of it for that scene.
Yeah.
Then they move on and
do you want to talk about the elevator scene?
Okay. Yeah, because that's the next scene. We'll be okay, them going
okay.
to the...
Yep. Okay. I didn't know which scene you were going to, so...
No, let's go to that scene.
It's just... It's weird, because it's like, again, we have the psychic sex couple, which is Ponytail and Blonde. And Blonde gets a rape vision, and the maid is with them, mm-hmm. and she's just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And he's like, you got to be quiet. She's doing her psychic thing. I don't know what else to say to that scene. What do you got?
I think that I appreciate the impact that they were trying to make as far as like the level of character about Neil. I get it. I get where they were coming from. He's a scumbag. Got it. He did this really terrible act. It's like, was
oh my God, that was Neil.
That necessary?
That like, was Neil. Was that Neil?
That's Neil. Yeah. It's supposed to be Neil.
I did not realize.
And it doesn't, yeah. And like the random.
I have like guy face blindness.
Okay. Well, and like the random shot of him just like growling.
Yeah.
It's like, what in the world? Like, I get it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that makes more sense in my part, because I was just like, oh, something shitty happened. I just thought it was like establishing a thing of like, because she's like, don't say things like that around, you know, Mousy.
Right.
And so I just thought that that was like establishing Mousy doesn't know what's going on. But I didn't realize that was so I guess I'm a dumbass. I didn't. And I was looking at his big dumb face and I was just like, what the fuck is up with this guy?
Right.
It's because, but we know he's a son of a bitch. We know that.
Right. Yep.
We didn't need to see a rape scene to know that, but we, okay, that makes, okay. You just blew my mind. Good job. Good job. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
So we move on from there. Everyone's doing what they're going to do for getting ready for dinner, because at this point in time, what do we get introduced to from Dana?
Her dog?
Her dog.
Yeah. I love her dog, Leroy.
Leroy.
Leroy gets a name.
The taxidermied dog that she brought a can of dog food for.
She is awesome. She is amazing. She carries him around and she talks with him like he is alive. And she's, it gets even better when she gets drunk.
Yes.
She carries him around. It is so good. It was so fun to watch. But yeah, so we see all of the people go into their rooms and she takes out Leroy. And it's good. It's great. Let's see. Oh, yeah, yeah. With stuffed dog. Yep, yep, yep. Oh, yeah. And then Alex has visions.
He does have a vision, yeah.
Of white people dancing badly. The dancing was not good. And they're like ballroom dancing. And then he's like, the guy... And it's like Phantom of the Opera-ish. And then the guy takes off the mask and it's douchebag. He's like, you can't save her. And then that's like it.
And it's funny. I want to make a comment about that scene because I got so nitpicky. I got so nitpicky by this point in time.
Oh, really?
I was looking for every inconsistency. Now if this is not nitpicking, please tell me, because as far as I'm concerned, Alex has this vision after picking up a postcard of the dining room. It is the most bland, dull picture. Like I don't think you could go to, I'm not going to say any particular hotels. They're not sponsoring us yet, but, if you
the
were to,
hotel that great Overlook Hotel.
There you go. That one, yeah. With that beach that clearly screams "Don't go on me." But it's a picture of the dining room, and as undescript as this picture is, he's holding it. He has his vision. When he snaps out of his vision, it is crumpled. Now, when he opens his hand, the image is on the back side, which means when he crumpled it, the way it crumpled is the wrong way, because the white, or the actual part you write on of the postcard, should be overlapping the image if he crumpled it in his hand.
It's art.
It's art. But this is where I start getting nitpicky, when the logic and consistency of the movie is thrown out the window, and I chalk that up to it's gone, it's done, they've screwed up too many times. Now I start looking for filming inconsistencies.
Like,
so
fuck you, puppet master. And I'm like, I'm having a great time. And my coconut rum. Kicked my feet up. I'm like, this is great. I'm like, give me more shots of that dead dog. I love it. I did not notice that.
Nope. Oh,
now, just, I didn't even notice he was a fucking rapist.
Yeah.
I'm not good at noticing that, I guess.
So then we move on to the dinner, and Dana has probably her best scene at dinner.
Wait, no, we didn't. No, let's not go to the dinner yet.
Oh, which you want to talk about the gratuitous bath scene?
I want to talk about Greasy and Ponytail and Blonde. Yeah, so they go to their bed, and it's because that's an iconic moment, John, when she throws herself on the bed, grabs her boob, like, honka honka.
Yeah.
And is like, oh my God, two movie stars had passionate love here. And I, like, at first she doesn't say who they are, and I'm like, Laurel and Hardy? And then I was like, oh, we could guess which two. Ponytail's like, yep, okay, whatever. You know, he just isn't having it. But she's like, no, really. And she grabs his hand and she's like, honka honka.
Yeah.
And it's, who is it? Clark Gable and Carol Lombard?
Yes.
Yeah. Which was not as entertaining to me. But I thought that was a great iconic scene of her like throwing herself on the bed and just being like, ah, honka honka. And I can't believe you skipped over that. Oh, and two, I think you skipped over the coffin lid. We get to see who is in.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Who snuggled up to douchebag. So the coffin lid is open, obviously, because it's an open casket, because that makes so much goddamn sense. And the coffin lid is the Last Supper, which I thought was weird, too.
Yes.
To have as the iconography. I think maybe it was to play into the next scene, which is the dinner scene.
Maybe
being the Last Supper. I don't know. That was like the only religious iconography that I saw in it. So whatever. It's full moon. You know, that's another thing. Full moon is love hate for me. It's a whole lot of love and a whole lot of hate. But anyway, so we see little fingers go by the lid from the inside. We're like, what the fuck is that? And we see Pinhead was hiding there the whole time. Now, Pinhead is one of the puppets, and he's got big fingers. They're actually lady fingers from a female little person who I think played in most of the movies as Pinhead. He was in there the whole time. So we get our introduction to Pinhead, who we did not see in the first scene with Toulon. Then we get to the dinner scene. I don't know. I don't know if I just like dinner scenes in movies or what, because I think I do. Because we talked, I talked a great discussion about the dinner scene in Hellraiser.
Yes, you did.
I did. I don't know what appeals to me, but this one was really great too, because Dana fucking lets loose. She lets Mousy have it.
Yep.
Because everybody's kind of like on edge because douchebag was a douchebag. And Mousy's like this little Mousy, like quiet, like nice, kind of grieving widow. And Dana keeps making jabs at his character and who he was and things like that. And finally, Mousy's like, you know, if you have something to say, just say it, which is great. And so Dana just fucking lets her have it. And this is actually the moment too that I said, Dana has been upgraded to having a name in my notes. Because she's got great lines. Because everybody's like, you know, shut up, Dana. And she's like, I'm not going to shut up. He was an asshole.
Right.
You know, what he fucking did to us, you know, I'm glad he's dead kind of a thing. And one of the lines she has was, I'm not a cynic. I prefer to think of myself as a nasty bitch.
Right. Yeah.
That was great.
One of the greatest lines in the movie.
And she says it so great too. She's a great actress. And she also says to Alex, fuck you, you Ivy League tight ass.
Yeah.
I like that one too. She keeps it real. She keeps it real. And it's really a great scene between Dana and Mousy, because it's just like kind of like that struggle, you know.
Yes.
Here we have, it's kind of a power struggle, you know, and kind of about who they are as people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just, it's great. It's great. Do you have anything to comment about that dinner scene too?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. You know, yeah.
Dana's fucking great. But then Dana's, because Dana, Mousy then leaves the table because she's pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great line too, because as soon as Mousy leaves, Dana says, did I say something?
Right. Yeah.
Which is great too.
Okay. You got me.
Yeah.
But and this, so this next scene is Alex runs after her to
this next scene is barf, but yes.
Yeah, it's
barf.
It's just
he runs after her.
He tries to comfort her, tries to like explain what's going on. She asks, like, who are you people? Who are you people? Like, come on.
And he says, some would call us magicians.
Oh, magicians. Like,
to some degree, we all have unusual psychic power.
Oh my God. Like that was, that's like,
that's what he says. And I said, what?
It, and it's like one of those cringe, like, ugh, magicians.
It's the like, worst exposition dump ever.
At all. Like to say magicians. And then he tries to justify it. Not yet. But he does like such a half-assed job of explaining the backstory between the members and Neil.
Yes.
That it's
honestly, it feels like it was another movie that you missed.
Right. Right.
It feels like, oh, this is the sequel to that movie.
Right. It's like,
and it's not.
he starts explaining how every member in some way, shape, or form helped Neil get closer to discovering Andre Toulon's secret to making, he really doesn't say making puppets, but like just the general secret, the knowledge that he had.
Egyptian magic.
The Egyptian, and we come to find out it's Egyptian magic, and it's like, where are we pulling this out of?
I put psychics plus Egyptian magic plus inanimate figures equals eternal life.
I mean, but that's the thing too.
That's what it is.
They never, you know, if you had said that the Egyptians used it to do X, Y, and Z, I could give you a little bit more credit. All you did was literally say, this was stuff the Egyptians had, okay? Mm-hmm. Did they use it? Is there any type of like just make me believe in this somehow. It's such a cheesy lineup for this entire concept that it's almost an afterthought at this point.
Honestly, it feels like he pulled it out of his ass.
It does. It does. It's like, it's almost as if there's a bigger secret and this is the one he made up to tell her.
Right. And she's eating it up, you guys. Right. She's eating it up. She's like, oh, that fucking makes sense. I'm like, no, it does not. What are you talking about?
I don't even think when Megan or Mousy is talking about Neil and how they met, I don't even feel that she understood that he was a, quote, magician or psychic or however he chose to portray himself, because he'll talk about metaphysics later. But it's like none of this ever came up in conversation. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I don't think it needed to. She's a simple lady.
Right.
She was lonely and she had older parents, and he came in with his big teeth and she was just enamored, you know, and she didn't know about the rape scene because she didn't recognize his face. but the way that she, again, is so unfazed. Most people would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Egypt magic, and Dana was the one finding the last true alchemist, and Blonde was finding the emotional history, and listen, what are you talking about?
Right.
And she's like, yep, that sounds about right. It should be, get out of my house, everybody. I'm burying my husband tonight.
Yeah.
And that's it. Thanks for coming, but no thanks.
I feel like Alex has never gone to like a staff party and been like, let me do magic tricks. Because I don't think he'd be on Yale staff much longer if they found out he was a magician.
Does he do his lectures like that? Because he would be the worst professor ever.
Oh, he'd be terrible.
You'd be like, I don't understand what you're saying, dude.
Everything's got to be talked to you, like, so sugar-coated. And
and just so complex when it doesn't need to be.
Right.
And you're like, what? What? The Egyptians were magicians? What?
Right.
Oh, God. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I want to take Egyptian anthropology with Alex Whitaker, whatever his last name was.
Alex Lionheart.
Whitaker. I got it right. Yeah. Okay.
No, Lionheart. Or Lionhead, at least.
Lionhead.
Yeah, it's the worst exposition dump that I've seen in a while. Because it just doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah, when he's like, someone call us magicians. I'm like, no.
No.
Not, actually. No. They would not.
The word is psychic.
The word is psychic. And even then, right. I don't know.
You quickly lose credibility.
Like quickly. And maybe you should stop teaching. Maybe take a sabbatical. So then we have the next scene, which is in the parlor, which has so many lamps. So many lamps. Did you notice that?
I did, but I just kind of chalked it up to the fact that, like, this hotel was, like, she said that she inherited the hotel and it's been in her family since the turn of the century. So I just kind of chalk it up to, okay, so it didn't have any wiring.
This is the most well-lit movie I've seen in a while. Like, in the parlor, I counted 9 lamps that were on, and that's not even, like, the lighting, just the lighting, plus the fire, plus the candles. It is so well lit. They must have so much stock in electricity because so many fucking lamps, so many. And after that, then I was like obsessed with finding all the lamps in the rooms. And there was usually like 3 or 4 lamps in a room. I'm like, what is up with all these lamps? Set designer, what are you like? Did you work in a lamp store? Like, that baffled me. It was just so many lamps. Anyway. I guess I might be the only person, but I was just like, and because they all look kind of like the kind of lamps that you would see in, say, like Murder, She Wrote or Golden Girls or something like that. Like those kind of like set-y kind of lamps. You know, they weren't like antique-y kind of lamps. They were like set design lamps. I'm like, where did they get all these lamps?
I'll have to take a peek back and look at that because I didn't notice the design.
Parlor scene, I was just like, oh my god, there are so many lamps. And they're all on. They're all on. You don't need that many lamps. Okay. I would just want to talk to the director about the direction of the lamps. Anyway. Okay, so we have the housekeeper in the lamp room, and she's like putting firewood in the fireplace, and here comes the part of the mouth sounds, because she does a lot of mouth sounds. Just like you know, like weird just mouth sounds, and somebody plays the piano, so that kind of freaks her out,
right?
And she has a bow in her hair, too. Did you notice that, too?
I did notice that bow, yeah.
I was like, okay. And not like a child bow, like Madeline kind of bow. Like a Madeline kind of like hair bow. I don't know. Like a kid bow. It was weird. So she's looking around. She can't find out who's doing it. But then we see a hand take the fire poker. And I don't know why they took the fire poker, because there are so many goddamn lamps around. Nobody would ever suspect. And they smack her with it. But it's a good scene with like the blood spraying upon the log.
Yes. But I'll say that the scene right before the blood, where like the poker actually comes down on her head, looks like it was sped up.
Yeah.
So it doesn't.
And she didn't have any defense. Like she didn't defend herself at all.
Right.
She was like, I allow this to happen.
Just took it.
No defensive wounds.
No.
She's like, you know, it's always been a dream of mine to be killed by puppets. And now I'm living that dream.
Done. Checking boxes. Bucket list.
Ugh. At least you didn't have to hear any more mouth sounds.
Right. Not yet. But you, audience, you have to hear more mouth sounds.
Yeah.
The next scene is mouse fainting, right?
Screaming. You
screaming.
She
screams bloody murder.
And you think she found the housekeeper.
Right, no.
But no. Somebody propped up dickhead. and his eyes are open. I like the scene because she faints, you know, of course, because it is kind of jarring to see, like, what is supposed to be a dead body, like, propped in a chair, eyes open, staring ahead, you know, awkwardly, although they would have taken the eyes out if it were a real dead body. Unless those are glass eyes. But anyway.
Yeah.
We'll know soon enough.
There you go.
But it's great because the cast aren't really freaked out. You think they're going to like be like, oh my God, how did this happen? But they're more like, what the fuck just happened here? Who's playing games? I found it refreshing because I'm so used to people like overacting on scenes like that. So when they were underacting, I'm like, that's kind of fun. So, and then they're like, oh, it must be the housekeeper. Why would she do that? We don't know.
Yeah, because literally she's the only one not in the room, so they just assume it's the housekeeper.
Yep. She was always kind of weird, always talking about how she wanted to die by puppets. Weird. Yeah, and then we get, I thought I was dumb, but kind of clever, but kind of dumb. We get a shot of the full moon. I'm like, yes. Oh, full moon.
Yeah, as if that had any real bearing on anything, but it's a nice, it's a nice shot.
Yeah, so then we get the scene of, because then everybody just kind of like dumps him back in the coffin and starts heading to bed.
Yeah.
They're not inquisitive at all. They're not like checking out things. They're not, nope. They're just like, yep, okay, well, it's time to hit the hay. But they do not hit the hay, at least not some of them. So Blonde, since everything she touches, someone has like fucked in on or around, she goes and takes a bath, and of course, people have fucked in the bath.
Mm-hmm.
Two lesbians during World War II.
Right.
And that was a gross scene too from Ponytails, because he's like, details.
Details. Ugh. He just turns into a little bit of a creep at that point too, where he's just like,
oh, turns into?
You know, it's just like, I got to say, I don't know if they're supposed to be in a relationship or anything like that, but he's like completely not focused on her.
No.
He's like, well, when you're done with that whole flashback, try and channel the guy who's dead so he can talk to him. It's like, it's like he's dead. Like, I'm still trying to figure out what the incentive is to keep up with what's going on.
And for what end? Just go to his fucking funeral and be done. Yeah, but I did like the green tile, like, of the bathroom. I thought that
really
was, yes,
I thought that very much dated the hotel.
Well, and that's what it was. I mean, that's, well, honestly, I think it dated it to like the kind of like the 50s, which I was like, oh, that's kind of like, so that would be a renovation.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I have some tile like that in my house now. And at first I like hated houses like that, and now I kind of like it.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Yeah.
So I saw it, I'm like, oh, kindred spirits. Gross tile. I love it. It's cool. And it does date the movie. It's very kitsch. Kitschy. Anyway, so she's in the bath and she's like, hey, are you around? And he's not around. And we're like, uh-oh, what happened? So she gets out of the tub and we get to see some soapy boobs. And then she goes around and then he jumps out at her with a stocking on his head.
We're stocking and wraps a stocking, not around her neck, but...
Close. Yeah. Close enough. And is gross about it. And is, I forgot what he said, but it's something like, doing kinky stuff or something. I don't know. But then he kisses her with the stocking on his head.
Which is weird.
So weird. They're a weird couple. And not in a good way.
No.
Not in a healthy way, I should say. Because again, he doesn't really care much about her. And he doesn't realize her proportions. Her body proportions. And we'll get to that later. And then I wrote down that I fucking love Dana and her witchcraft psychic magic. Because Dana is very kind of like into witchcraft. Like she has the chicken's feet. She has like this talisman on her door that she burns to protect her from the spirits. Spoiler alert, does not really work. Mm-mm. So we get to see that side of her where she has more kind of a witchcraft. And they do actually call her at one point, I think the White Witch or something like that.
Yes, we got a call from the White Witch. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, so she's more kind of akin to that too. So that was cool. So then we go back to Ponytail and Blunt, who are ready for science.
Sure.
Well, he's taking notes.
He is. He's in his bed with the tape recorder talking about what they're about to do.
It's gross. I mean, I'm not saying sex between two individuals is not gross, because it is. No, I'm just kidding. But again, they're not a great couple. Mm-mm. Not a great couple. So Blonde ties up Ponytail, and I don't know how this is going to evoke any kind of link to asshole, like to dickhead, because this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to establish kind of a link or something to see what had happened to him.
Right.
How this is going to work. But she ties him up, and there are so many candles in the room. So many. And it's so well lit, this movie. Let's see. I'm looking at my notes here. I'm just like, still can't see puppets right fucking there. I don't know what that's about.
That's just about everywhere in this movie.
That's about everywhere. Because we're kind of going back and forth between the characters too as they're getting ready for their nights and stuff like that. We see also the puppets kind of looking in on everybody. And kind of getting a gauge. This is also where we first see Tunneler. Mm-hmm. He's kind of just introduced out of the blue. There's no grand introduction. He's just kind of there suddenly. Tunneler looks kind of like somebody's stung in the face by a bee.
Okay.
And a drill on his head.
Yep.
So that's what he looks like. But, oh, and I wrote in my notes, why wasn't a game ever made of this? I wrote this in the middle of a sex scene. And I didn't mean it as that, but I meant, like, why wasn't there a game where, like, you could play as, like, one of the puppets? Like, you could choose your puppet and, like, go in and, like, kill people.
I don't know. Would you want to play that?
Oh, God, yes. Of course I would. Who wouldn't? It's a great game. Because then I was like, who would I pick? Of course, Blade. But anyway, so they're having sex. And suddenly the doors open and she's like, oh, somebody's in the room. And you hear like noises and stuff like that, but you don't see anything. So she gets off him and goes to look for what's going on. And she looks under the bed. What does she find?
She finds Tunneler.
It's cool stop motion animation.
It is. His little drill spins up and I mean, it sounds pretty clear. I mean, I'm not exactly sure why we don't understand what a bzzz, you know, if you didn't expect a bzzz, why would you be okay when you hear that?
Yeah. And the guy, and Ponytail on the bed is just like, what's going on? Is this a joke?
Yeah.
Is this a game? And she gets tunneled.
Right.
And she's gone. But he's still tied up in the bed. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed an inconsistency. He was like super sweaty, and then suddenly he's not super sweaty.
He's not sweaty, yeah.
Yeah. And then that's when Leech Woman appears. Mm-hmm. Goofy music starts.
Yes.
Goofy. So fucking goofy. And this is when I'm talking about how he does not realize the proportions of a normal size human lady. Oh, because it's that great gag where he's blindfolded and he thinks that like a 14-inch puppet is his human girlfriend because she's all like touching his chest and kissing it. And he's like, yeah baby. Yeah. And you're like, what?
Yeah. Makes total sense.
What are you talking about? Like, I get like in dream sequences, like the mask where it's like a dog licking you or something like that, as gross as that is, but like, you know, whatever.
Sure.
It's proportionately sized. It's like, but this is like smaller than an American girl doll. and it's like kissing on his nips, and he's like, yeah, you're a naughty girl. It's like, do you not understand how a doll would feel in comparison to the person you have sex with on a regular basis? Mm-hmm. He does not understand blonde at all. Anyway,
he does not.
So Leech Woman does what she do best. And she, real grossly, and this is actually one of the parts of the movies that I have trouble with.
It's painful to watch.
It is.
Like, I know, honestly, this scene is probably no more than probably 3 minutes, but it feels like forever.
It feels like 20 billion minutes.
Just waiting for her to cough up all of these leeches.
Yeah, and it's just like not even cough, like vomit them.
Yeah, yep.
And like, as much as I hate mouth sounds, oh my god, like this
these were some mouth sounds.
And like leeches, which again don't look like leeches. They look like, I don't know what they look like, a cross between a leech and a wet turd, you know? It's just so bad.
Yeah.
And then that's when he's like, ouch, that hurts, honey, you know? Yeah. And then he rips off the blindfold and, oh no.
Yeah. He's
covered in leeches. And they kill him somehow. Because they're magical. They have to be.
I mean, they're four leeches.
And they're four leeches.
But again, we're talking about a movie where puppets came to life, so.
We're talking about a movie where a guy crumples a thing and then it magically appears the wrong way. I mean, we have to suspend our disbelief. So they're dead. They're donezo. So that scene was like Gerald's game, but with puppets.
Yeah, right.
So then we see Dana, and I love Dana, and she is so drunk with her stuffed dog. And she's seducing Alex, and she is too good for Alex. And she's so great because he's like, oh, I can't sleep because they're fucking. And which he says, rearranging the walls, which is kind of cute. And she's like, how about you and me rearrange the walls? And she's got her dead fucking dog in her arms and a bottle of wine in the other. And I'm like, life goals.
Yeah.
She's great. He says no, surprisingly. So she goes to her room. So she goes to her room alone. And we see Dickhead is there in her room.
Sitting right there,
propped up, eyes open. And again, it's great because she doesn't scream or freak out. She's like so fucking super chill. And she's like, hey, asshole. You know, they think that you're dead and can't do anything, but I know better, you know. And she does like this incantation. And then she says to her dead dog, like, oh, don't worry. You can't hurt us anymore.
Right. Now, I want to say one thing about that incantation. As she's walking toward him, she's shaking her maracas, or I'm not sure what they are. And I don't want to be insensitive to cultural materials.
Yeah. I don't know what they are either. And ditto. They make noise.
They make noise. But, and again, my nitpickiness with inconsistencies, at minute 58, pretty much exactly, as her arm is raising past his face, he blinks. He actually blinks in the chair. And I'm, again, nitpicking, but good grief, I'm just like, you're supposed to be dead.
It's art.
It's art. It's art.
It means that he's wavering to a woman's strength and stability.
That wow. I stand corrected.
She is a magician. Okay. I didn't just pull that out of my ass. Yeah, so we think it's going to be okay, but it's not okay. And Pinhead strikes. And again, it feels weird calling him Pinhead because we did Hellraiser.
We just did Hellraiser,
But yeah, so this is Pinhead from this guy. It's not from Hellraiser. And he like breaks her leg. very violently. Yes. And again, she's so tough. She's so tough. She fights him off real good. She throws him a lot. And so they're in this like throwing war, and he comes at her a couple times and she throws him down the stairs, and then, oh shit, here comes Bleed. Honestly, I thought the fight in the elevator was really good.
I gotta say, the only thing I found very awkward was Pinhead throwing punches at her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're a lady in a Pinhead suit throwing punches,
sure,
it's awkward.
Sure, and I get that, but I mean, I don't know if there's anything they could have done to have made those scenes better.
Maybe strangled her or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Pinhead does like to punch, and it does look kind of awkward. Again, it's hilarious though, just watching all the puppets get thrown. I enjoy that. I enjoy the puppets getting thrown. They're funny when they when people just throw them, and it doesn't really do anything. It kind of like knocks him down for a little bit. Doesn't do much damage though. But she puts up a huge fight, and then they're in the elevator. And again, I was so mad because the music is like, doo, 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 and I'm just like, if this was scored better, this could be a really good, intense scene. But because of how it's scored, I'm just like getting ready to go on the carousel.
Again, just the score in general for the movie was not up to par.
No, it wasn't. It was not. Especially for that scene, because it could have been so good. It could have been so good, because like I have a fear of like things like that. Because like in the Twilight Zone episode where the woman has those like really small creatures that are like attacking her and stuff like that, that freaks me out. When little things attack, that is scary to me. So to see his little knife come through the door and his little hook hand, like that is that can be very scary, and I was not feeling any anxiety because it was just like, do 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 do. I'm just like, okay. Anyway, she gets to the end, to the bottom.
Yep.
And who's there? Pinhead. And she puppet throws him a bunch of times, and then
then
Blade cuts her throat. But it's a good send off. She really fought hard.
She did.
And then we get a great scene with Jester without his hat and a shit-eating grin. Because that's one of his expressions. He has, oh shit, I shit myself, shit-eating grin,
grin,
I'm going to kill you in your
sad
sleep.
Face.
Oh yeah, and I'm sad. Sad.
I'm sad.
I canceled my favorite show.
I say, right. and I'm gonna say they made such a point of Jester being the last puppet created by Toulon, and Jester up to this point hasn't done anything.
No,
he really hasn't.
No, he's creeped around. He's been a creeper. That's it.
Yeah,
it's kind of disappointing. Yeah. So Mosey takes Alex to a secret white room with the Phantom of the Opera.
Yep.
White people dance badly. And, oh, wait, it was a dream. And then he turns on his lamp, take a shot, then pulls down his sheets, and then who's there?
The heads of each of his friends.
Oh, my God. Shit, it was just a dream again.
Another dream.
That he turns on his lamp. Oh, I'm like, are you kidding me? It was delightfully awful. It was great. Yeah, so it was a dream within a dream scene. But I liked the decapitated heads. That was kind of fun.
It was funny, especially Ponytail just having that big, awkward, like, Joker grin.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, like he didn't smile like that at all in any other part of the movie, but you get, and it's almost hilarious. It almost like, this wasn't even scary.
No.
We're like, what in the world? Like, I'm trying not to laugh.
I don't know. I think it's kind of scary when my friends come into my room and have their decapitated heads under my sheet.
Well, that's just rude.
Oh, don't bite my toes.
What I find uncomfortable is how that scene must have been filmed.
Oh my God, yes.
Like, because Alex is in boxer shorts and all three of their heads are basically like down between his legs.
They're like, oh. It was a very visually interesting scene, though.
It was.
I liked it.
But it was quick.
Like, it was very quick.
So
you didn't get to enjoy it very long.
Mm-mm.
But I have to say, I enjoyed it better than the Phantom of the Opera dancing. So we get a knock at the door, and oh, Mouse wants to take Alex to a secret white room.
Again.
Oh.
Wow.
Where have we...
And they start doing the scene again, line by line, and I'm just like,
fucking line.
Please, just can you skip ahead? And then, thankfully, they have Alex just answer all the questions.
Yeah.
Like, just...
I wrote down, is it really boring to go along with premonitions if you have premonitions? Like, how boring and horrible would that be? Because you're like, okay, the person's going to say this. They say it. Now I have to say this. You say it. Now they have to say this. Like, to make something happen, that would have to be so obnoxious. I do not want premonitions as my superpower.
No.
That would be maddening.
No.
But yes, finally he does stop her, but it takes a while.
Yeah, it does. It does, because he still has to get his shoes on.
Yeah. Let me get my shoes on. Okay, looks out the door.
Yeah.
At that point, just be like, yeah, you have a secret room. Take me to the secret room. And then that's when things really pick up, though, finally. She shows him Toulon's diary. Mm-hmm. It does not have erotic friend fiction in it.
No.
It just has like the secret to life or whatever.
Well, it's him, Toulon, literally talking about how much he cares about the puppets. Like, he thinks of them like his children.
Oh, yeah.
All this, and it's like...
And I hope they don't go into the wrong hands.
Right, and it's, again, more just like, so why did you do what you did? But, anywho,
we find out Toulon really loves his puppets, which we knew already, you know. So then he's like, oh, we gotta get out of here. Which I took as, oh, we have to get out of here, there's killer puppets on the loose. And all my friends are dead because I had that premonition.
Right.
But then he's all like, oh, wait, let's go into the dining room. I'm like, okay, I guess we're doing this now. And then they find all their friends. Well, he finds his friends dead.
Mm-hmm.
And the effects look like, I don't know how many people have seen this movie. Probably not a lot of people. I think it's called Summer Camp. And it's like a really cheesy movie, but my parents really liked it. But there are people in... It's basically about all these like rejects that have to go through summer camp. Summer school. That's it. Like all these like rejects that have to go to summer school because they flunked out. There's two people there that are really into special effects. And there's one scene where they try to convince somebody that they killed all of the students. And so all the students are like supposedly dead, but they're just dead because of all the effects. That's what these effects look like. It just looks like, oh, these are effects. These are fake effects.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, and actually, honestly, I think the one in summer school was better. But it's like, oh, I see the latex of that. Okay, cool. You know. So there's not a lot of amazing work there. But basically that's when Dickhead makes his grand entrance with the puppets.
Right.
And that was great too, because they're like, you're dead. And he smiles and he's like, yes.
Yep, I'm dead.
So what does he say? What does he...
Oh, the whole, like, I can't... I killed myself. Oh, go ahead. If you have it, go ahead.
Oh, I don't have it. I just have like, I just wrote down, Mouse doesn't understand the plot contrivance, and then scratch that out. I mean metaphysics.
Yeah. Right. No, that's basically what he says is like, I can explain this to you, but since Megan is the extension, since Mouse is the extension of the audience and the audience is too dumb to understand what I would say.
I'm not.
In the metaphysical sense, I killed myself and now I'm back. It's like, what? Okay, cool. Like, that's what happened.
Yeah. So he took the puppet magic to make himself alive again, which doesn't make any sense. Okay, this is where it gets deep. Actually, it could get deep. Because, like, then I was like, well, is he a puppet? And how can he talk when the puppets can't talk? But then it goes back to, like, the inanimate object. And then it's like, so it's saying that bodies are just inanimate objects then. And I thought, right. Oh, that's pretty deep.
I mean, this is the inconsistency where it starts showing up, like, even more. It's like, so now, like, these inanimate objects, which, again, we're assuming the Egyptians used this magic to animate inanimate objects. But if that's not the case, because Toulon did not use it to animate people, mm-hmm. where did the extension of using this ability to reanimate, however you want to look at it, people come from? Where, so...
And why pick your own body? I mean, it's squishy. It's full of green goo, you know? So yeah. It's like, there has to be... I mean, he could have done a better job, but was it his magics that made it happen to where he can talk and control himself, basically? Because he's the puppet master, supposedly.
Supposedly, yes. Yeah.
But he himself is a puppet if he uses this magic.
Again, the like, and I'm going to get a little bit more into some theory at the end.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll get there then. So there's a lot of, we don't know what's going on. And he, this whole time too, when he's explaining it, he's fucking pacing like an asshole.
Oh, so back camera, and forth.
Back and forth, like maddening. So the cameraman has to keep like fucking on him like a piece of shit. Oh my God. But he has like a major God complex now.
Well, sure.
And he talks about like how he basically killed her parents.
Yep.
To try to do this as basically test experiments and things like that. And, you know, it was just a dick to her. Like, oh, didn't like you or whatever. Right. Then he barely tosses Jester. And
right.
The puppets get mad.
Yeah.
Because he just barely tosses him. And then, yeah. And then... And then he punches her.
Yeah, just like completely out of the blue.
She runs at him, he punches her, and Jester's like, damn. Like, he doesn't say it, but his face does it.
Right, now he's like starting to look around and what's, oh, that's a bad thing, and you're Jester, a bad
Jester's
guy.
Jester's the audience.
Yeah, I mean.
And then immediately after that, he backhands Alex.
Yeah, just.
And then Jester, he makes a sad face.
Neil is just beating on Alex. Mouse comes and like tries to crack a vase over his head. Does.
Yeah.
And
then he looks at the others like, are you seeing this shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she momentarily saves Alex.
Right.
And they try to escape.
And who's waiting at the front door?
The maid.
The maid. Out of nowhere, she comes.
The puppet maid? Question.
The Teresa, the one from the beginning who got cracked in the head with the fire poker.
I know, but we think she's a puppet now.
And now she'd be a puppet. Well, I mean, like the skimpy outfit she's wearing now is not in her original character's repertoire. I'm sure.
We don't know her. John.
We don't. We don't.
Don't shame her.
We do, but she's like, her hair's all frizzled. Granted, I guess being reanimated might do that to anybody.
Right.
But it was just so random. It's like,
yeah,
that
I did recognize her though. So that was good.
I was really hoping you weren't going to say, oh, was that a character we met?
No, I knew that.
But
it is, it's surprising because you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. And then
where the hell did she come from?
She just jumps out and goes, going somewhere, or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
They turn, run away, and then that's it.
And then there's a sneak punch.
Yeah. Yes. But that's it for Teresa. It's like, it's...
Oh, yeah, that's
it. For this character that gets reintroduced after supposedly being killed. No, she's here. It's cool.
Yep. Yep. She's a puppet now. And she can talk, too. Like, I don't know. Well, maybe she's not a puppet. Maybe she just got passed out and decided to live her dream.
Yeah, there you go.
Her dream of saying something like going somewhere.
Going somewhere. Be a jump scare. Be a jump scare in a horror movie.
It really wasn't that big of a jump scare either.
It wasn't, no.
I thought the sneak punch was more of a jump scare because Alex like walks right into it.
That probably would, yeah.
Suddenly pissed.
So then Mousy is trying to get Neil off of Alex, and then out of nowhere,
but
it's Pinhead. Now the puppets are revolting against Neil.
Yeah, the puppets don't like it because he was talking shit about him.
He was
like, they're a bunch of dumb fucks. And Jester's like, are you listening to this? No, I'm just... But yeah, he's talking shit about them. Like, I don't care about them, which is a dumb thing to say in front of murderous puppets.
Right, right. Literally the people that made this happen, you know, kill again, your three best
hubris.
Friends.
It was hubris.
It was.
He said, you can't destroy me. You have to eviscerate me or something like that.
Right.
Completely eviscerate the body for me to be destroyed.
So now they get Pinhead trips Neil into the elevator. The elevator closes, and it just becomes a cage match between Neil and the puppets.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is now this scene makes so much more sense to me because this was a scene where Neil was a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And now the monsters are turning against him.
Right. And I'll say, you know, this is where he just like picks up Pinhead's head and it's...
Yeah, he decapitates him.
He decapitates him.
He pulls out his head and throws it.
But all the other... not even yet. So Neil jumps. He's trying to get out because I think Tunneler and Pinhead are trying to get him, which is the most... a painful scene watching these two puppets try and jump literally 6 inches to grab his foot.
Yeah, that's cute.
And
yeah, because they're, and again, like, because Tunneler's just like tunneling his legs, and we see, yeah, and so he doesn't like that. He does feel pain.
Yes,
he does feel pain, so he don't like that. So he tries, he's in the elevator, like top part of it, trying to like die hard it out, you know, get out of there. And who's up there?
Oh, Blade.
And Blade does not care for him to be up there. So he cuts his fingers off when he tries to escape. And then he very like kind of cutely flicks them back into the elevator.
Right, yeah.
And that's when we see like that Neil is full of like the secret of the ooze.
Green blood, just okay.
Like bleep. Yeah, like
you know, cooler. You know what would have tied that together was if one of the puppets had gotten hurt and had green blood, had something to just not make it random.
Like if Pinhead was thrown, like one of the times he was thrown, he had a little bit of blood.
Yeah,
he was thrown like all the fucking time.
He fell several flights of stairs, like, you know.
Nobody's business. Like, he was like, brush it off.
Right. Just get up. But, you know, that was the most random scene. Is like, he's got green blood squirting out of his fingers.
Well, it's kind of like the Reanimator kind of thing. Like,
it is. It is.
You know, it's relying on that heavily.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just squirting out. Bloop, bloop. And so then they grab him and they push him down. And suddenly there's Leech Woman. There's a lot of suddenlies in this because suddenly there's just another puppet all the time.
Yes.
Like, it just happens all the time. Suddenly Leech Woman. And Blade opens his mouth with his little hook hand. And you're like, oh, no. Oh, no. At least I was. And out comes the most disgusting leech of all.
Yeah.
It's like a massive wet turd. And it's so gross.
And it was like, it's, you know, after him literally just saying, like, to destroy me, you would basically have to
completely eviscerate me, basically.
And now, granted, each puppet has a hand in killing Neil, essentially.
Yeah.
From Leech Woman choking him with the largest leech you've ever seen.
Yeah, he chokes on it. It doesn't go in his tummy. It doesn't go in his lungs. He chokes on it.
He chokes on it.
It's hanging out of his mouth.
Blade is, cutting pieces of him up. Mm-hmm. Tunneler is drilling into some random area between his neck and head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's just like, you just hear, and he just runs into the side of him, and just something's happening. And then Pinhead essentially breaks his neck.
Yep.
And it's like, cool. They all got there.
He's screaming. And Mouse is listening to this and crying. And Alex is just like horrified, like watching this.
Yeah.
Like, fucking leech. Maybe stop that. He was a dick. I get that. But so yeah, breaks his neck. He stops screaming.
And he stops. Yeah, that's it. And let's be honest. I mean, it's pretty easy at this point in time because you already had a funeral scheduled. you just put the guy back in the coffin, take him to the funeral.
You can't have an open casket now.
No. Be like, no, because when the funeral director goes, why is the coffin closed? It's like, sir, this was a suicide.
Suicide by leech. and drill.
Yeah, and
broken neck.
And broken neck. You don't need to worry about.
He was thorough.
He shot himself in the mouth with a leech. But I mean, like that, and then pan to the next day.
Well, we don't know when it is. It just
Right.
It's sunshine. It's sunshine. And there's calm in the world. There's like gentle, normal goodbyes between Alex and Mouse.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how you holding up, champ? Kind of a thing.
It is. No, you're absolutely right.
And it's like, all right, well, call me later. Okay. It's so weird. And he leaves her in this house where the most traumatic things in her entire life have happened. And then it gets fucking great.
Yes.
It gets awesome. Okay, so she walks up the stairs with Leroy the dog, the stuffed dog in her arms. And as she's walking up, what happens?
She rounds the corner, literally cut scene, and now the dog's alive.
She sets him down and says, come on, Leroy. That little dog comes up. So she used the magic.
Yep. She used the magic.
To bring a fucking dead dog back to life.
Hey, I mean, you know what? She liked the dog enough.
But whose soul is in that dog?
And see, that's the other thing too, is there's no talk about what actually happens.
No.
Where does this...
Credits. Then it's credits.
And then it's credits. It's credits. Right to credits.
Yep.
Right to credits. I mean, the only indication of magic or anything specifically associated with animating them is in the very beginning, Toulon, when he's after he has done painting Jester, waves his hands over him and says something like, life of my life. He says a little chant, and suddenly Jester's head starts rotating.
And it's like, it's very light. It's like, there's no like super magic. There's no blood. It's very easy peasy.
Right.
Like you and I could do that. No problem.
Yeah. And it's like one, if what I think is supposed to be the incantation or the actual ritual, whatever, is what I think it is, which is a scroll or a piece of one piece of paper that Toulon is rolling up and puts in the case with the puppets. If that's it, it's a very small piece of paper.
Right.
So the incantation can't be that intense. So what, going forward, what does that mean about the green blood? Like, is that something that just happens to dead bodies? Was that the embalming fluid?
Maybe was the embalming fluid.
I mean, but there's no like...
But while we're on the subject of that, he wouldn't have any eyes either.
You're right. The mortician who took care of him did a terrible job. So let's go back. You said at the beginning you wanted to do if this was the movie, what would the sequel be?
Right. So we all know what the sequel's turned into, but just based on this movie alone, what do you think the next sequel would be, like, logically?
And to me...
Because we end with, basically, has the Bodega Bay Inn and all these puppets, mm-hmm. who are killer puppets, and Leroy the dog, and a psychic friend. So what do you think would be the next step in this franchise?
And I don't... I think that the next puppet master would be Megan Mouse. Mm-hmm. She reopens the hotel.
Mm-hmm. I like this.
And somebody who was associated with this group outside of the ones that showed up realized that, you know, Neil passed away probably in association with this. So they come and start exploring the hotel, and I want to say a SWAT team. SWAT team shows up and the puppets have to fight off a SWAT team. Yeah, I'm going with that. I'm going with that.
Okay. That's pretty cool. It might also be haunted with all those psychic ghosts.
There you go.
That's also a direction that could go. I think I'm actually going to go with a prequel.
Ooh.
Which actually...
necessary?
Yeah, which is necessary. But that prequel would be about the psychics themselves, mm-hmm. And how they got together and what that was all about, and basically more motivation and history behind that, because it made no goddamn sense. But I would think it would be great as a mini series to follow Megan around with Leroy mm-hmm. and Megan, and like they, like, yeah, like you said, it opens up Bodega Bay opens up again, and like that's like a reoccurring like show thing of people coming in and things like that, and they have to solve problems using the puppets, kind of like the A-Team but with puppets.
There you go. Okay. So still puppets, but...
Still puppets.
But more about the psychics.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then on the side, we can do like a kind of, you know, mini series or something.
Sure. No, you're absolutely right. I would watch those sequels and that series. But I'll say what my one theory, and I don't know if this is supposed to be, if Megan walking away with the dog and animating the dog was supposed to like be some like, oh, look at this type of thing. But I feel that to justify a lot of what happens, Megan needed to have been in cahoots with Neil the whole time. So why would she play dumb the whole time? Well, if Neil's whole motivation for bringing the other psychics to the hotel is basically to kill them because they knew what he was doing, what he was looking for, and couldn't mm-hmm. have anyone else trying to obtain that power. And Megan letting Alex go at the end just meant that she didn't feel he was a threat. Mm-hmm. So
kind of not.
He really isn't. I mean, at that point in time, seeing puppets literally tear a person apart is probably the kind of thing that you go, well, this was California. I guess I'm never coming back to California. But that is what I think they were trying to pass off, because I can't figure out how Neil would have reanimated himself. It doesn't seem like you can just retroactively put the spell on yourself, or pre-death put the spell on you. And, you know, the maybe needing the others to feel comfortable with Megan was why Neil chose to berate her. I don't know. I feel like it's completely plausible that Megan could have been there while her parents were being experimented on with this. Maybe she's just as cracked as Neil is.
What if she is a psychic too, but her ability is to manipulate like others' perceptions or their abilities? So like, yeah, she can absolutely. She can fuck with like his dreams, so she can make it seem like, oh, Neil's, you know, you can't save her, you know? So it's like, oh, I have to save her now, even though there really isn't any compulsion otherwise, other than, oh, I have to save her because he said I can't save her, you know?
Right.
And maybe the same thing for Neil. Maybe he was her experiment, and she knew about the puppet master and the Bodega Bay, and she knew all of that. Maybe she led him to believe that that was his doing because of his ego.
And all of those are completely plausible to make this movie work.
It's possible. It is a weird ending because you're like, Leroy the dog.
I just feel like they took a lot of concepts and crammed them into this movie. I think that they could have done the same thing and not expanded. You didn't need the Egyptian stuff.
Yeah.
You literally could have made this movie without mentioning anything about Egypt. But I'll say the movie was filmed for a budget of $400,000, and
it did pretty good for that.
It did do pretty good for that. You look at the set is literally a hotel.
Yeah.
There's a couple of shots from the Alex's carnival. Office,
yeah.
The carnival, Alex's office at Yale, and a very thrown together lab,
which could have been in the hotel.
It honestly could have. So you think that the majority of this movie was filmed in a hotel with a couple of puppets, some very, you know, Leech had to have been a latex doll, mm-hmm. just to have been able to pass the leeches through. All of them were dolls that couldn't have been that hard to make. I mean, save for
the stop motion animation,
and save for like the handful of close-up scenes of Blade, they all look fairly plastic. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it would have been that hard to make. And I think that for what was created, the franchise that was created out of a $400,000 budget, kudos to Full Moon, because good on you.
Well, I think that was kind of Full Moon's whole thing, was like, it's a spaghetti thing, you know, let's just throw everything out there and see what sticks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we get something kind of fun like this, and sometimes we don't, you know.
Yes.
I think that was, and of course, like VHS, like they never really released, to my knowledge, anything really in theaters. It was all VHS and word of mouth that way. And if you don't have to really do big promotions,
right,
that's also like a way cost saver too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're very safe business people.
Yeah.
And yes, we got something fun out of it. I would say that. But is this art? No, I'm just kidding.
That's for another show.
That's another show. Yeah. Again, watching it again, it was fun. I took a little bit more away with it this time. I own it, so I can watch it whenever I want.
Sure.
Out of all of them, it is so weird because it is nothing like what it becomes. This is correct. So left field, honestly. And it feels like you're thrown into a movie that is a sequel. Like, oh, where's the first movie? Mm-hmm. Where they all meet together and become psychic pals. That didn't happen.
No.
The other movies, for as whatever quality as they are, at least it's they're kind of more coherent with like the Egyptian magic and whatnot. That's my take.
Yeah, and again, as I said, this movie was not my particular cup of tea. And after seeing it after so long, this is such a small snippet. The first movie is actually just such a small snippet in the wider range of what this franchise has become that I completely forgot it had anything to do with psychics. In comparison to the Nazis and the
actual puppet making, the actual
right
puppets...
Even in comparison to where the second movie goes, yeah. This one was standalone, odd, and it's, again, not one of those movies. I'll put it away for another 6 years, and I'll come back to it. And to be honest, I might now go and start watching the other ones just to kind of refresh myself as to where this series really goes.
Uh-oh.
But at this point in time, like, yeah, this one will get mothballed and I'll go watch Hellraiser 20 more times. brain wipe on Puppet Master.
Well, I think the difference too is like Hellraiser was such his baby, you know, like, this is my baby. I want such creative control. I want, you know,
true.
This yeah. handled with such kid gloves. And I think Puppet Master was like, let's throw this together and throw it out there.
If there's any major horror trope that you're looking for, it's in here.
Yeah.
Somewhere it's in here.
Yeah. And it's fun. If you're looking for cheese, it's fun. So let's plug ourselves. Again, John has a new Twitter account.
New Twitter.
So go follow him or yell at him or I don't know.
Please give me a reason to have it.
Yeah, yeah. Tell him that his mic is a lot better now.
It is. I got a new mic. I had a little virus, computer virus, but I'm better.
Yep.
And I hope you're enjoying the new me. This is how I'm going to sound from now on.
You can also see us at Haunted MTL.
That's right.
So we will see you next time. Stay safe, but also stay scared.
That's right.